Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Beginning 50 years ago and until 1996, Ohio-born adoptees could neither obtain their original birth certificates nor contact their birth parents. That all changed late last month with the rollout of a new law that could affect hundreds of thousands of adoptees born in Ohio between 1964 and 1996. Joining us now by phone from Cleveland is the founder and executive director of Adoption Network Cleveland, someone who has worked 25 years on this issue, Betsy Norris. Welcome to the show, Betsy.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
And to our listeners, are you affected by this law? Are you a birth parent choosing to redact your name, for instance, as the law will allow, during those particular years of 1964 and 1996? Give us a call and let us know what you think. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Betsy, there was a period of 32 years from 1964 to 1996 during which adoption records were sealed. Why did that end in 1996?
Well, we started in the 80s, actually, proposing laws that would have, the way we originally proposed it, go back to 1964 and open up the records as long as the adoptee was an adult. In the 90s, no state had gone back to open up a previously closed period of records like that, and Ohio, understandably, didn't want to be the first. And so Ohio did what many states did in the 90s, which was to take the records from adoptions from those dates forward and allow those to be open. And so it was a partial fix, you know, okay, we recognize this isn't the best way to do it with the closed records. We're going to make that different in the future, but they weren't willing to go back to the previous period.
What changed to make them willing to do that?
With the current law that's being
implemented
now? You know, a lot of other states have done it in those interim periods. We're, I believe, the 12th state to go back and open up a previously closed period now. Mm-hmm. And so it was looked at very differently. It's gone very well in the states that have implemented these laws. The sky hasn't fallen. People's fears haven't come true. Most of all of the groups that had opposed it back in the 80s and the 90s came forward to support it this time around, so that made a huge difference. We actually had no opposition. That one person came forward to testify or even called our sponsors to speak against the bill. So
what,
it was a hugely different scenario this time.
Right, and I remember covering it back then. What were the fears if they opened up these records?
I think a lot of misunderstanding and myths about adoption that the people used to hold more than they do today. You know, adoption historically has had a real stigma about it, and people thought that secrecy was, adoption wasn't something to be talked about. Maybe people were kind of hanging their heads in shame if they were touched by adoption, and now we know that that's just not true.
My guest right now, Betsy Norris, she's founder and executive director of Adoption Network of Cleveland. We're talking about a new law. It rolled out last month, then it could affect hundreds of thousands of adoptees born in Ohio between 1964 and 1966 by opening up those records. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. So, Betsy Norris, what does the new law do?
So the new law goes back to 1964 and will allow adult adoptees, once they're 18 or over, to apply to get their original birth certificate. It's phased in, and so it became effective March 20th of this year. And the first phase doesn't yet open the records to the adoptee. That comes next year. But we're in the phase right now where birth parents can have a voice, and there's a couple different ways that they can do that. They can file a contact preference form with the state that has options that they can express their interest in or lack of interest in being contacted by their child, should their adult child be one that accesses their record. So the first choice that they can make is, yes, I'd like to be contacted. Here's my contact information, name, address, phone number, email address. Another option that they can choose is, I'd like to be contacted, but through a designated third party. So maybe they'd like, the adoptee to make contact through one of their family members or a friend of theirs or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And a third option for them to express that they'd prefer not to be contacted. At the last minute, actually in the process of the bill, the Senate added another option that's available only this year. The contact preference is available anytime from now into the future for the birth parent to fill out. But the fourth option that's available only for a limited time this year and then it expires is that a birth parent can come forward to ask that their name be removed from the version of the birth certificate that would be released to the adoptee. And other states have done this. There really haven't been many birth parents that have come forward to ask for that, but the Senate, I guess, thought that that was an important option.
And this affects both birth mothers and birth fathers.
Yes, if the birth fathers are listed on the birth certificate. Okay. So depending on the circumstances at the time, they might or might not be listed.
And how will birth parents be notified, particularly if they're not listening to this show right now, and if they live out of state, out of the country?
Laws change all the time, and it's incumbent upon any of us to know what the laws are that affect us. And we've had 100 now, media articles just in the last year about this bill pending and then passing. It's been, with social media and websites, and, it's I feel confident that the word has really gotten out. I've been contacted from people all across the country. It's interesting because people ask that question, and I can understand why. How will birth parents know the law is changing? But I also have an interest in knowing, how are adoptees going to know the law is changing? This can be life-changing for many adoptees and give them access to critical medical information and other personal information about themselves. And so, yeah, it's very important that we get the word out in every way we can.
And if a parent doesn't, for one reason or another, does not fill out their form at all, is their name automatically shared?
The birth certificate will be released, verbatim,
with their name.
If they don't redact, yeah. And so the birth parent doesn't have to take action to allow anything to be released. The law allows for the birth certificate to be released, and then the birth parent has they fill out the contact preference form, which actually also has a space for comments, so they can write out, personal comments to the adoptee, and that form is released verbatim with the birth certificate. As informational. If they choose to redact, then the birth certificate is released, but with their name specifically deleted.
What sort of comments might a birth parent put there? What are the expectations of that?
There's no expectation. They might leave it blank, but we felt it was nice to be able to give that method of communication. In other states that have opened records with this type of a contact preference form. Most of the birth parents that have used the contact preference form, the vast majority, have said, yes, please contact me, and here's my name and address and phone number. So the comments section is really just an opportunity for a birth parent to say, I've been thinking about you, this is how I feel about it, just something a little more personal than just putting down their demographics.
Some kind of encouragement.
Mm-hmm. Or it could be...
Discouragement.
Well, it could be, I don't want to be contacted. I'm going through a hard time in my life right now, but, maybe I'll change my mind in a few years. Just this is what's going on. Just, something to give the adoptee some feeling, if they want to, about what their situation is.
You said the new law will have a ripple effect, not just across the state of Ohio, but across the country. How so?
Well, Ohio is to date the biggest state that has done this. Illinois also opened up their records, and for whatever reason, Ohio has even more records in this time period. So there's 400,000 records, according to the Department of Health, that are closed that will be opened by this law. And so many of the other states that have done this are smaller states, Oregon, Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island. And, so people are really watching the larger states, Ohio and Illinois. Right now there's legislation pending in Colorado, which looks like it's probably going to pass. There's legislation in Pennsylvania. There's legislation in Connecticut. So as legislation passes in a variety of states, then it gives the other states more confidence to go that direction.
There's an interesting note on your website that says that adoption searches have always been possible in Ohio, even without the adoption file. How does that? So of these 400,000, it's perfectly plausible that many of them have already reunited on their own.
Absolutely. We had adoptees flying in from other states that are Ohio adoptees but now live elsewhere to testify for the bill. It was interesting. They were motivated to fly in here to testify to get this bill passed. But they, for the most part, had all had reunions. And many, many, many adoptees and birth parents from that era have completed successful searches and have had a reunion. But in those cases, I would venture to say that the adoptees still want that piece of paper about themselves and still want their birth certificate.
Coming up, we're going to talk to a couple of birth mothers who had children born during that period from 1964 to 1996. One of them is also an adoptee. So we'll get a couple different points of view regarding the bill. But Betsy Norris, all things being equal, there was no opposition to the bill this time around.
That's right. Yeah, it was amazing. Sorry, it was an uphill battle to get here, but we had all kinds of support, and so it was really wonderful.
And you're saying that it's our general societal attitudes have a lot to do with it, our attitudes about adoption.
Well, about adoption, and also I think the internet, and I'm not going to sit here and say that there's not one birth parent that doesn't want to be found.
Sure.
There are some, but I think our bill balances people's interests because people can be found whether the records are open or not. And so it's really not about reunion. It's about legitimizing the adoptee's feelings, giving the birth parent a voice for the first time to have access to put something in the file. I'm a pre-1964 adoptee, and so when I was searching almost 30 years ago, I was able to get my birth certificate from Ohio because it was open to me. But my birth mother had no way to send any kind of message to me. And so when I located her and made contact, it was quite an anxious time because I didn't know. I tried to be very sensitive to what I might be walking into, but I had no way of knowing. And so it would have been much more humane, in my opinion, to have this type of a contact preference form where she can have a voice. I know what her feelings are up front. And if she had said, please don't contact me, I certainly would have respected that. In my case, it turned out very well. She absolutely would have said, yes, please do contact me. Of course, I didn't know that when I made the first contact, so I was walking on eggshells.
I'm talking with Betsy Norris. She's the founder and executive director of Adoption Network Cleveland. She's well known around the state house for her work on these kinds of issues, making open the adoption records, the birth certificates of children who are adopted. We'll continue our conversation about the new law, its ramifications. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. In late 2013, the Ohio General Assembly passed a law unsealing adoption records that have been kept secret for more than 30 years. The law now allows birth parents to choose to share their names with the children they had given up for adoption between 1964 and 1996. Still with us is the executive director of Adoption Network Cleveland, Betsy Norris, an adoptee herself and a chief proponent of this legislation for many years, 25 years now. Joining us in the studio is a Columbus area birth mom who is also an adoptee, Margaret Sabick. Welcome.
Good morning, Ann, and thank you for including me today on this topic.
My pleasure. Margaret, does this new law affect you in any way?
Absolutely. As being both a birth parent, birth mother, and an adoptee, I have the anomaly of looking at it from two out of the three sides of the triad. Although I am already connected and reunited with my birth family, and I've connected with my daughter, there was still a very long period of time that it took for me to find records for my birth parents. Granted, my adoption was in 1964. I was born in 1962. And as you can imagine, back in the 80s, we didn't have the technology and the resources that we do today. So it was a laborious process.
That's interesting, Betsy Norris, when Margaret says that this isn't just about people born in 1964. These are people who are adopted in 1964 and on.
That's right. It's when your adoption legally finalized through the court system. So we have worked with several adoptees who were born earlier in the 60s, but for whatever reason, the court process took a long time or they weren't placed right away. And so they could easily fall after that January 1st of 64 date.
What do you think, Margaret, of the law that was just passed? Is it, for example, specifically about the one that the portion that gives a birth parents a year to redact their names from the birth certificate?
Well, I would like to address that in two ways. I think having the opportunity for the redaction to happen is good, but as an adoptee, you're looking to complete your circle of who you are, and there are components missing. If that information is redacted by a birth mother, it prevents the child from answering questions that they've been looking for many years. I think, as Betsy had mentioned earlier, having the comments field available that you're able to, one, introduce dialogue, encourage dialogue, or also put the comments of saying, you know what, yes, I want to do this. I want to give you the rest of your story, but let's take it at a slow pace. As Betsy had mentioned earlier, so much of a stigma exists for birth parents and stereotypes. And I think one of the things that both ANC as well as the Ohio Birth Group has been doing here locally is trying to eradicate what a birth mother is, that, you know, there are different reasons that cause adoption, and they're not for selfish reasons. There are things that impact someone's life, and the birth mothers so much love their children, have never forgotten their children, and want to have the opportunity to reunite.
Norm in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Norm.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am the parent of two adopted children, boy first, girl second, boy born in 78, daughter born in 81. Pardon me. And my wife has always wanted to contact the birth mothers. I have taken the attitude of, you know, let's hold off and let the kids decide. Our son is absolutely not interested, never has been. Our daughter has come and gone, but has an issue now where she's had breast cancer at 24, obviously some years ago, and has recently been diagnosed with something else that means she has a high risk of ovarian cancer. So now my wife is really ginned up and wants to go after this. My question is, can there just be an exchange of medical records?
The new law does provide the option of a birth parent filling out a current updated medical history. And if a birth parent files the contact preference form, that's a voluntary act. If a birth parent files the redaction form to redact their name, they do have to file a new medical and social history along with that. There's really not, from my experience, a really efficient way to do medical history in a completely non-identifying way. So, unless a birth parent files an update, and again, it's just as good as their self-report would be, it's not their actual medical records, it's the report of their history, or you're dealing with what the adoption agency would have had in your case back in the late 70s, early 80s, which, you know, is pretty incomplete and doesn't follow into the future. So in situations like that, probably the only way to get the types of things, like in your daughter's case, if there's really medical implications, to get the types of things the doctors would really need, she would probably have to pursue contact, is my general experience. You didn't really ask, but I guess I'll give unsolicited advice, to your wife, that It does need to be your children's decisions as adults, whether they want to pursue that or not. As parents, you can encourage your kids, you can support them, you can help them to know this is something that, you know, you don't have a problem with it, you absolutely encourage them to do. But as adults, it's really got to be their decision. They're the primary ones that will be affected.
Norm, good luck with that. Thanks for your call. It's a good question. He brought up something that made me wonder about this, Betsy and Margaret. He says his son was never interested, never has been, never, you know, says he never will be. Might a law like this trigger interest in people who say, I'm not interested, because maybe they're not interested in a long search, a laborious search, and then maybe pain at the end? Margaret?
I think that's a really good question, Ann. There are a multitude of color across that spectrum.
Yeah.
Of minimal interest as much as knowing what the name of a birth parent is, what their ethnicity was, things that might not have been included in the original records that were given to the adoptive parents. There are some individuals that want to have contact and see how it goes, and then other individuals, excuse me, like myself, that had a vested interest in knowing who my family was and being a part of their family as well. So bridging between both my adoptive family and my birth family. I think it's also important to say, as Betsy did, that the choice is the child's. And that a parent, I have seen situations where parents have been involved and to the extent that what an adoptive parent thinks about adoption, subconsciously or consciously, is passed down to the child sometimes. And that could also impact their decision of how they view birth parents or in their choices of looking for them. In either event, I think it's really important to emphasize to have a support group around you during that process. In Ohio, we're very fortunate that we have support groups with the American, with the Adoption Network Cleveland, with Ohio Birth Group. Here in Ohio, we have support groups for adoptees, specifically just adoptees, for a group for birth parents that is a closed meeting for birth parents. And then we also have one that incorporates everyone. And as recently as this week, there are people that are coming to the meeting because they've heard about the bill and wanting to know, you know, what are the steps that they need to take in order to start unlocking doors. But in addition to that, also understanding that that door is either going to remain closed or that it will open and that anything can happen on the other side. That there, again, are all aspects in reunion can occur, and that having the support or meeting with people in a similar background is something really, you know, helpful. It's a roller coaster ride, I'll be honest with you. And there are so many things that are unexpected. And I think having those outlets and those resources is paramount during the reunion process.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking today about a new state law that opens the birth records for adoptees born between 1964 and 1996. If you have a question, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Ann in Cleveland, you're on the air. Hi, Ann. Hello, Ann.
Hi.
Hi, Ann.
Hi, I would like to know how would I go about getting my daughter's legal birth records, because she don't have them. Someone else was using them, with my father. Okay, her father was, okay, her father's name, I'm sorry, her father's name is not on her birth records. How would I go about getting those birth records with her father's name on there?
Okay. Well, Thank you, Anne, for that call. Betsy Norris, you mentioned earlier that often the birth father's name, or sometimes at least, is not on the record.
Was your daughter adopted?
No, she wasn't.
Okay. You could check with the probate court about getting the birth certificate amended. That's a little bit outside my realm, so I'm not sure exactly what the process would be, but if I were you, I would call the probate court and see what they can do about amending the birth certificate to add the father, and they can tell you more about what the process would be.
Okay. Thank you, Ann, for that call. We're talking about adoption law changes. If you have a question or comment about adoption law changes, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Margaret, have you noticed a change in attitude toward you, or does it feel, did you testify? You said you testified in favor of the...
I was there in support.
Okay.
With Betsy, along with Kate Livingston, who is the founder of the Ohio Birth Parent Group here in Ohio. And I would have given my testimony as either a birth mother or as an adoptee, mm-hmm. wanting to have the records open. So I would say that the process has encouraged me to have dialogue with people that I'm not familiar with, like today's show, which has been a fantastic opportunity to spread the word. You had mentioned before, how will people know about this? And Betsy was talking about, you know, people will know whether they're in the country, out of the country. There's so much going on by both birth parents and adoptees, and blogging and tweeting. And when the records changed, so much of that was going on. And that there are people out of state that also blog and tweet when things have happened here in Ohio. So it is becoming so much more, I'm going to use the word vernacular for lack of something else to say. Mm-hmm. It's become commonplace.
Okay.
And it isn't something that's hidden in the dark as it once was.
What about the attitudes of adoptive parents, Betsy Norris? How much did that come into play in the success of the legislation?
Well, as Margaret started to say, we have had, through the process of the legislation, we had so many people that wanted to testify that, unfortunately, there wasn't even time for everyone to testify.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, no one came to testify against the bill. They give ample opportunity for proponent, interested party, which means that, you know, you're neutral or you have mixed feelings about it, and then opponent. And there was no one that came forward, even for interested party. It was all proponent. So, you know, really overwhelmingly, adoptive parents, birth parents, adoptees, professionals in the adoption arena, legal scholars, mm-hmm. all kinds of people came forward to testify that this was the way Ohio should go. And that, you know, that's not to say that some adoptive parents don't feel threatened. I think that can be normal.
Mm-hmm.
I know in my situation, my adoptive parents wanted to protect me. And while on one hand, they understood my need to know, they didn't want to see me get hurt.
Yeah.
And so they were protective, and they tried to, you know, advise me as best they could. But they really did support my need to know. And so, you know, it's a deeply emotional issue on all sides.
Margaret?
I just would like to add to that, Anne, in regards to my looking, my mother was a huge supporter of this. She understood how important it was for me to look not just in the mirror to see who I was, but that there was the possibility of looking like someone else. To the point, the anecdote is my mother was watching Phil Donahue and called me on the phone and said, Margaret, when's the last time that you were looking again? You know, I saw the show on Phil Donahue about adoption. And that's who my mother was. She wasn't threatened by that. And when we're talking about how do adoptive parents feel, there are a lot of other people like my mom that encourage a child to understand their full story. And I think it's important to know that. And it definitely helps with the process as opposed to an adoptive parent having a negative viewpoint of birth parents.
Anna Marie in Columbus.
I think it's important to know that.
We'll have Anna Marie turn down her radio. In the meantime, I want to thank Margaret Sabick, both a birth mom and an adoptee from the Columbus area, for joining us today to talk about this.
Thank you, Anne. And just if I can say one thing in closing, that the Ohio Birth Parent Group, we're on our website. That's ohiobirthparents.org. We have resources for people as well as the support groups for birth parents, adoptees, and everyone. And we also have a birth parent group that's in Cincinnati as well. And we meet once a month.
All right. Well, thank you very much again for joining us.
Thanks so much, Anne. I appreciate it.
We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We're talking today about a new state law that opens the birth records for adoptees born between 1964 and 1996. Now, birth parents have a year to decide whether or not they want their names to remain on the birth certificates of the children they gave up for adoption during that period. Still with us is Betsy Norris, Executive Director of Adoption Network Cleveland. Also with us in the studio, Margaret Sabick. She's a Columbus area birth mother and adoptee. And joining us from Cleveland by phone is another birth mother whose daughter was born in 1994 when adoption records were sealed, Jennifer Williams. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you.
Jennifer, when you put your daughter up for adoption, did you know she wouldn't have a way to contact you?
Yes.
What were your feelings about it? How did that affect your decision to go forward with the adoption?
Well, at the time, I did what was Ohio's most open adoption. I went through an agency, so I was able to give them as much information as possible that they could pass on with no identifying of, you know, names. And I've kept the adoption agency updated with my email, my phone number, my address, so that if she were to call them for information, you know, they have it. It bothered me that, you know, she may not be able to track me down, but mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough that when I had her long enough that I was able to baptize her, and I eventually got her original birth certificate. So I have a copy of it. While she doesn't, I do. And I think that is difficult.
So you're a birth mom. Your daughter was born in 1994 when adoption records were sealed, and you have not been reunited with her.
No, I haven't.
What do you think about this law, and what are your feelings?
I look at it from a lot of different points of view. I think it's wonderful that these people who have been adopted have an opportunity to get their paperwork, to find out who they came from, not necessarily where they came from or answering the questions of why was I given up, but the who I came from. I think is a very fundamental thing that people want to know. Everything comes from that, and I think this law is wonderful. I think over the 20 years since I gave up a child, adoption isn't quite so taboo anymore to discuss. A lot of people that I've talked to, I'm very open. I gave a child up for adoption. This is who I am, and I know that there have been some people who look at that and say, well, that's not a good thing. Don't be proud of that. Well, I am, because I'm proud that I had the courage and the insight to know that someone else could raise her better than I could. And for me, that was the end decision. I could not give her a happy, healthy life at the point I was at in my life. And it was only fair.
Filling out a form that allows you to be contacted doesn't guarantee you'll be reunited.
Correct.
How do you feel about that and the wait?
I don't hear the phone ring and wonder if it's her, but I do wonder if maybe the person I walk past in the mall is.
Hmm.
A piece of paper is just that. It's a piece of paper. It can get put anywhere. It's what the people are doing. I have my name out on several websites. I actually just moved, so I updated my information with the agency. I think it's what you put into it for what you get out of it.
Hmm.
I'm not going to depend on filling out a piece of paper to answer all the questions.
Betsy Norris, is there a typical point in a person's life when they start to wonder or decide that they're going to look for their birth parents?
I think it varies, but like Jennifer's daughter is 20, if I'm doing the math correctly,
mm-hmm.
And that's young. She might certainly be in college and teenage years and early adult years are years that kids are kind of individuating and figuring out who they are versus their family. And, most people at that age are, kind of working on having less parents in their lives instead of more, if you
yeah,
will.
Yeah.
And so I think for a lot of adoptees, it's more maybe even in your mid-20s or I've seen a lot of adoptees come forward when they're about to turn 30. Sometimes having your first child or even pondering having your first child really triggers, hey, not only don't I have my own medical history, but I don't have anything to pass along to my child's doctors. I know for me, I grew up not even knowing what nationality I was, and I have red hair, and people would look at me, are you Irish? And, I didn't know. So there's a lot of different things that can trigger. Some adoptees, for whatever reason, it doesn't get triggered until much later, and for some adoptees, it never gets triggered, and that's their choice. But birth parents can also search, although the law doesn't open the records directly for birth parents.
Hmm.
As we were talking about before, people can search and reunite kind of no matter what the law is about records, and it's still very possible for people to take steps to make themselves available and or to search.
Anna Marie in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I want to celebrate this law and the openness that it now permits and encourages even.
You're a birth parent.
Yes.
Okay.
I am a birth parent. I have been in touch with my daughter happily for probably the last 20 years, and it has been a wonderful celebration for both of us, especially given the fact that both of her adoptive parents are dead. And also, she has been my only child, so it has enriched both of our lives at this juncture.
Was it difficult to find her or for her to find you?
Well, I was chair of adoptions for Central Ohio, so I was very familiar with all of the process and procedures involved. And it was not that difficult. I wrote to the adoption agency, which was in Fresno, California. She was born in San Francisco.
Okay.
So that enabled a pretty quick, and I had written letters, a letter that I addressed to her adoptive parents because I did not want to upset any balance in that family.
Mm-hmm.
So they had it and had the option of sharing it with her, and which they did. And so we met in California, and then a meeting was arranged, and it was a very emotional but a very joyous experience, I think, for both of us. And so much that we're sharing in common. Her husband is from Stanford, an engineer. My husband is from MIT, an engineer. And there have been many parallels in our lives. So it you know, I think it has enriched both of our lives. We're in touch now.
Mm-hmm.
I send gifts to her children.
Mm-hmm.
It has just been a wonderful experience.
Well, thank you for
both of us.
Well, Anna Marie, thank you for sharing that. We appreciate it. Thanks
well,
for the
thank
call.
Thank you for permitting me to.
Thanks for the call. If anyone else out there wants to give us a call, 614-292-8513. We have an email from Mary. She says, I happen to be an international adoptee from Italy and have a lot of friends in Ohio born here and adopted here. When I met my biological mother for the first time, I finally understood why, and it eased my pain of feeling abandoned. And I learned a lot about my health concerns. Birth mothers who give their children up aren't all evil. I totally encourage reunions. I suppose you might say probably none of them are evil.
I think the best way to look at it is, no, I don't think people, birth mothers are evil. I think there's a lot of baggage and a lot of weight that go on to birth parents. And recently someone said, people are people. And they have individual characteristics, whether or not it's part of adoption or it's a typical family. And with how much things have changed in the last 10 years, just with blended families, if it is remarriage where children are blending together, it's adoption, even interracial adoption, international adoption, there's not the people aren't so blown away when they see colors that don't necessarily mirror each other.
Mm-hmm.
There's not the staring that once occurred. In addition to that, the other analogy that has been used is that adoption is like honey. It's very sweet, but it's sticky because it can get everywhere and it touches so many lives. But I think what's important about it getting everywhere is that if your heart is open to having more people in your life, it can be a very wonderful experience. And one of the things that I'd like to say, too, about birth parents when you say, you know, they're not really evil, is that there have been some birth mothers that have been part of closed adoption that even though they didn't have contact with their child, every year they would send a birthday card or perhaps a gift and send it to the adoption agency of where that originated from in hopes that their child did know that they weren't abandoned, that they weren't loved. And I think today's show has been a great opportunity to maybe take some of the fear away that the adoptees have about we have this opportunity to reunite with a birth parent or a birth parent to say, I was, you know, shamed into the corner, into the darkness, and there is light that can be seen on the other side. And for adoptive parents, that it's not so scary that your child, you know, loves you and mm-hmm. they're not going to be jumping ship. It's a great opportunity.
Jennifer Williams, that's
yes.
a great analogy, the honey analogy. Have you anticipated the stickiness of it all?
Anticipated, yes. Prepared, no.
How do you?
I mean, I don't think you can ever be 100% prepared.
Yeah.
I told my husband on our first date that I had a child I placed for adoption. And, you know, I told him, you know, this is who I am. Take it or leave it. You know, my parents were extraordinarily supportive when the whole adoption went on. My eldest daughter, who's now 15, when she found out I had given up a child, it got really sticky. She got really angry. And it wasn't that I had hidden it. It's just I had never, I guess, put it out there in a way she quite got it.
Mm-hmm.
And my youngest is curious.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be sticky. I think it's going to be scary. But I think you're right. If you walk into it with an open heart, it can be really good. As long as you're not over expecting things. It's going to take time. It's not going to be a cakewalk.
It sounds a lot like parenthood in general. Not to diminish at all, you know, the difference.
I think this is just another side of parenthood that, you know, it's, I'm here if she wants to find me, but she is only 20 years old, and I'm not going to go and try to uproot her life right now. I'm out there, but, you know, if she never looks for me, it's not because I didn't put myself out there. And by doing that, I know that I could be hurt. But I think you have to reach a point in your life where either you've dealt with it or you haven't. And how you deal with it is your own making. It's your own choice.
We have an email from Anne in Plain City. She says, I am both a birth mom and an adoptive mom. 17 years ago, my son found me through the adoption network in Cleveland. It was one of the most beautiful events of my life. My adopted sons have only found dead ends. Is it now possible for them to search? They will always be my children, but I also want their birth parents to know what wonderful people they brought into this world for us to love. Betsy Norris?
Well, it certainly will make them more able to search, give them identifying information to work with. So depending what they've done, that they found dead ends, this will probably open new doors. And so I would encourage her to be in contact with us again, and we can probably be very helpful. In Cleveland, we do have, Margaret was saying, they have in Columbus, we have support meetings that are open to anyone who's touched by adoption, adoptees, birth parents, adoptive parents. We have separate adoptee meetings, separate birth parent meetings, because there are some very sensitive issues that people want to discuss in more of a closed setting. We also have search assistance, and I would encourage people to check our website. We have a lot of information about implementation of the law, both on adoptionnetwork.org and on our Facebook page. We have a graphic, it's not 1964 anymore, Ohio adoption records laws are changing, that I would encourage people to share on Facebook to help get the word out.
Okay, that's adoptionnetwork.org. We'll post that link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Margaret Sabick?
Yes, in addition to that, the Ohio Birth Parent Group is actually going to be having an information session on the new law here in Columbus. So specifically for the person that had written in, as well as others within your viewership, that's going to be on Saturday, May 31st. And going to our website subsequently, probably within the next week, we'll have more details available. So we'll be talking about the laws, what the impact is, as well as walking through the new forms and ways to find out.
What about the right of children of adoptive children to know their birth father? Is there any obligation along those lines, Margaret Sabick?
That's a good question, and I'm glad you brought that up. I've come in contact recently with two birth fathers, and there have been, I have heard narratives where the birth father didn't know at all.
Mm-hmm.
And in some situations where the gentleman has, and there seems to be a proclivity with adoptees to reach out to the mother first. And I think it matters on how they identify and gender, if they want to just meet with the mother and have that dialogue or reach out to the father as well. There seems to be more boys that would like to know about their father, but you're right, there's a large population of birth fathers that haven't been brought into the dialogue and have so much to say about it and the impact it has had on them, especially when they might have been left out of the decision-making process.
Another chapter.
Absolutely.
Down the road. Well, Margaret Sabick, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you again, Anne.
Margaret Sabick, both a birth mom and an adoptee, lives in the Columbus area. And Jennifer Williams, a birth mom whose daughter was born in 1994. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us to share your story.
Thank you for having me.
And Betsy Norris, founder and executive director of Adoption Network Cleveland. Betsy, congratulations on your success with this new law.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.